And I think if you're going out and you're getting your new customers with direct mail, you better have those kind of markups. And you also, and you better have a back end. I mean, I say put the odds in your favor. Own and control your own product, have a big markup on it, and have a back end.
Yeah, but you're saying also proprietary products, because if you have at least one thing that's yours that you're selling, it's a lot easier to develop the back end than if you're selling everybody else's.
Yeah, what you normally do is you use, there's nothing wrong with other people's products, even 50% products. That's fine. Use them on the back end. I say create your own proprietary product that you sell on the front end. This is just the way I believe in it. This is the way I do it. Create your own proprietary product that you own and control, whether you acquire the rights to someone else's product, the exclusive rights. And there's a famous mail order guy named Joe Kosman who wrote the book How I Made $1 Million in Mail Order, and he tells you and shows you how to go out and acquire your own product, whether you do that or you create your own product. That's fine. Create the lead product, then you have a big markup on it, you have margins on it, then you can do direct mail and you're not losing money up front every time you make a sale. Then use other people's products on the back end, their catalogs, their products, and maybe you have a 50% margin on them, but that's fine for your repeat business and your repeat sales. Next marketing mistake, not using endorsements. Now, by endorsements, we mean having somebody else take your product or service and endorse it to their list. And Jonathan already gave an example earlier where somebody else who didn't have any repeat products to sell, they took his product, wrote a little note on their letterhead, sent it out in their stationery or their envelopes, and sent that letter to their list. That's called an endorsement. I think that you're making a big mistake in business if you don't take advantage of endorsements, especially true if you're selling. Because if you make cold calls and sell someone, the national averages are you'll sell between one out of ten to 3 out of 10 appointments. But if you are getting endorsed to people and getting directly introduced to them, the statistics are you'll sell something more like 7 or 8 out of 10 of those appointments. I mean, there is just no comparison between when you have an introduction that's a personal introduction to someone versus just if you're calling them up cold on a sales call. And people, you know, hate making cold calls. And I think that's great, because I don't think you should make cold calls unless you really have an affinity for it. I think the easiest thing to do is go out and get people to introduce you to their vendors and suppliers, their customers, and the other people they do business with.
And the endorsements work two ways. If you don't have a customer list, but you have a product, then what you do is you get someone else to endorse your product. If you do have a customer list and you don't have products, or even if you do, you find someone else with a product and you endorse their product to your list, and you end up with phenomenally higher percentage rate of converted sales than if you just mail out cold.
The next marketing mistake would be not making a guarantee or not guaranteeing your product or service. Declan.
Yeah, well, you have to guarantee your, if you don't guarantee your product or service, you're not standing behind what you sell. It's a very basic level. But you all taught me when I didn't put a guarantee on my products or services, I wasn't getting anyone to buy, because there's no difference. There's nobody behind the business. And once you stand behind it, it's the strongest thing you can say about what you're selling.
And I believe in taking the guarantee and really making it, painting a little picture with it, making it really clear. In other words, not just saying, well, money back guarantee, snore, snore, snore. When I use them in sales letters, I like to put it in a subhead, and it'll say something like this. You're protected by an ironclad 100%. You can't lose money back guarantee. It certainly carries more power, more impact, and more persuasion and influence than just saying, well, your satisfaction is guaranteed.
The funny thing is, in many cases, you have to offer a guarantee. Whether you offer one or not, whether you denominate one in your sales letter or not, if people complain and send back the product or complain about the service, you will be forced anyway to return their money, either through legal means or through the pressure that, you know, on your reputation. So you may as well have that in your sales letter. It, in many cases, having a big guarantee or a long guarantee reduces returns, and it always, I don't think there's one case where having a guarantee reduces response rate. It always increases response rate, because it increases the customer's confidence in you as a business.
I just recall in the Men's Warehouse commercial, mm-hmm. is the sense of a personal guarantee too, something you stand behind. But I'm just thinking the one thing, the line that I always remember from that commercial, everybody does, is, I guarantee it. And it just sticks in your mind. And that's the first thing you walk in when you walk into that store. You think of that.
Well, now, the other point on guarantee is a lot of people that sell expensive products and services, I'm talking about $1,000, $3,000, $5,000, $10,000 or more, they say, well, geez, I can't guarantee my product. And maybe you can't. I mean, it's very difficult if you have a real service-intensive product. But what you normally can do is create an introductory offer, and you can guarantee that. You can guarantee the first, because all you're trying to do, you're trying to get someone to do business with you once so that you can create a relationship and make money off the funnel, the repeat business, the repeat sales. So you take an introductory offer, and you offer a guarantee on that, and get them started as a customer, and then maybe you don't have guarantees after that, but the initial one you do. For example, me, I write sales letters for clients. I may not always offer guarantees on sales letters, but the very first sales letter I create for a client, I'm going to guarantee it because I want them on board as a new client. And I'll explain. You know, I do not offer this on an ongoing basis. Since you're a new client, for this one time only, I will guarantee this letter will work, or I'll give you your money back.
As a consultant, I also guarantee the steps that I'm going to take when I design websites, which is impossible to guarantee a website. But here's the steps, A, B, C, D, E, that I'm going to take. And once they know it, what I'm really guaranteeing is exactly the approach I'm going to do.
Declan, your guarantee is brilliant, and I learned a lot from your guarantee. And you did it kind of just because you had to. You had to think of a guarantee, but you didn't want to guarantee performance because there's so many other things that can go into success or lack of success. So what you do is you just guarantee to do steps 1 through 5 or steps, you know, A through C. And by guaranteeing that, you really put yourself in a position where the customer feels confident in you, they trust you, they like you, but you're not setting yourself up for, you know, having to give a big refund.
Mm-hmm.
The next marketing mistake is not giving a reason to act today. And in marketing, this is part of what we call the offer. The offer includes the payment terms and any free bonuses and other things like that. But the one that's just really crucial in your marketing is giving people some reason to act today. I don't know how many times that I've gone specifically to websites and looked, and they're selling some product or some service. And they just have the information there, and they have the price there, and the implication is, well, when you get around to it, when it feels right, when you feel when you're in the mood, you know, then is why don't you write to us and send us some money? And what you've got to do is you've got to make it easy for people to order from you, and you've got to give them a reason to act today and not tomorrow.
Well, you just hit on something else. I don't know what's worse, giving people a reason to act today and then not allowing them to, or having an 800 number and a 24-hour day answering service and to credit cards, and then not giving people any reason to call immediately. You've got to give people, Marlon, you have kind of a rule with deadlines. You like to put actual deadlines, if not for offers, certainly for bonuses, those types of things. You must act within 3 days. You must act within 7 days. Have you found that those dramatically increase response, and by how much?
Well, actually, I use 10 days, and I cannot give you the percentage. The reason that I use 10 days, though, is because there's a very large company. It has 850 employees. They're one of the largest direct mailers in the United States. They have a million customers on their list. They do $200 million of business a year, and they've tested this out very thoroughly. And what they've actually found after a lot of testing is that 10 days, at least in the type of business that they're in, works best. The 10 days is very convenient deadline to use, and the reason is because 3 days is a little bit, depending on the offer, 3 days is a little bit too short of time to act in. 7 days is okay. I like 10, but you go much longer than 10 days and it's really not urgent enough, and the person's liable to lay the letter down or print out the website but then lose the information and not go ahead and order. So I like to give people a deadline or a stimulus to act today. But in general, if you're taking into account the entire offer, which is the terms, the offer includes a number of things, the actual how your product or service, what they're actually getting for their money, the guarantee, that whole little thing, what we call the offer, it's the most or the single most important thing in terms of the response that you get. And the difference in the offer can be a difference of 200 or 300%. I mean, it can be a major difference.
It's funny. I mean, we all know we're in the business. We all know that that's just a gimmick, the you know, act within 5 days, within 7 days. And yet, just last week, I received a sales letter from a very well-known marketer, and I really wanted to buy his product because it's not a product I'd been familiar with. And the thing that I was terribly nervous about, and I made sure when I called the 800 number, I mean, I was honestly nervous that I was not going to get those 5 free bonuses because I was afraid that maybe the 10 days had somehow expired. Now, ironically, the sales letter was about 2 or 3 months old. Of course, they still had the bonuses. Of course, I was still going to be able to get them. But even sophisticated buyers like us, I mean, we're marketers, and even we would know, if anything, that you know, a company would probably give us those bonuses. Even we fall for it, and if we fall for it, then customers absolutely, positively, 100% fall for it. They always believe that if there's a deadline on there, even though they think it might be silly or they think that it might not be real, they always are worried that maybe that minuscule chance that this one is a real one, and I better call, not later on today, not even today, like now. I better pick up the phone now before I forget about it.
And it actually even makes you can make you look real good too. I got an order from a woman who said, I only if I met your criteria, if I beat the deadline, do I want this. I sent you a check for this amount, and if it's good for this, it's okay. And she had actually sent it two or three days past the deadline, and I just called her up and said, fine, I'll do it. It's no problem. The offer was still good, but she wanted to ensure her action, even though it was late, was still based on that deadline.
Well, there's a couple other nuances here. You know, sometimes people say, what if I print a deadline in the letter? The problem with printing the deadline in the letter is just the moment you do it, is just the moment that something delays your mailing and you don't get it out, and then all that printing is wasted.
No, you never want to use a real date.
So, well, what you can do is you can print a real date on a separate order form. So you don't have it on the entire sales letter. You only have a date on the order form. And that's one way to use a specific deadline and even create a little bit more credibility and urgency in the orders by printing a little date on the deadline. You don't have to do that. I usually use 10 days. It's a lot of trouble sometimes to do that order form thing, but I do know companies that do that successfully. They'll print it, they'll stamp it, you know, on the order form in red, or they'll just have it handwritten in. So that's one nuance on the urgency. The other point on urgency is how you word it. I like to say something like this. We have a limited supply of these bonuses. We only guarantee you'll receive one if you order in the next 10 days. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, I have a limited supply. If I have 1 million of those bonuses, my supply is still limited. Someone might order 10 million.
Limited to 1 million.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So you always have a limited supply. And I will only guarantee that you'll get the bonuses if you order in the next 10 days. I refuse to guarantee it beyond that. Of course, I didn't say I wouldn't give them the bonuses. I only said that I wouldn't guarantee it. The other thing you can do is just not really bring that up and just say, and if you order in the next 10 days, I'll also toss in 3 free bonuses or whatever. I like to use the bonuses to create the urgency, and because it's real convenient, because people want those extra bonuses and there's usually some good value. I like to use free reports or audios or videos or that kind of thing. There's real good perceived value there, and it gives people a good reason to logically justify, well, geez, I really need to go ahead and order now because I want these bonuses, and it keeps them from putting off. Everyone procrastinates. Everyone does it. And it's your job to give them a reason to not procrastinate.
I am just about to go to a seminar workshop, which I'm very excited about, and I decided to go there before, but I just recently reread the sales letter, and I decided to go just after reading the first page of the letter. When I read the bonuses, and I made up my mind that I would give them a call later on the next couple of weeks and register for this thing, when I read the sales letter and I saw what the bonuses were, I was so nervous about losing my place that I called immediately after reading that sales letter. And I just said, I didn't even get a hold of the business, I got a hold of their answering service, and I said, well, you just tell them to put that aside for me and to save those seats and to call me immediately so I can give them my credit card number so I don't miss out on those bonuses. Again, we're sophisticated people, but it wasn't honestly, I was going to go to the seminar. It wasn't the initial offer that made me call. It was the bonuses and the fact that if I didn't act quickly, I would miss out on those bonuses.
You know, marketing people have weird fantasies, and so do insurance people. Yeah, and one of the weird fantasies that marketing people have is that one day they're going to do a direct mail or some kind of promotion. And that one person is going to call up, I just missed the deadline by 3 days. Can I still have the bonuses? And you're going to go, no, you missed it. You procrastinated. you can't have the bonuses.
Call later.
But however, I do not recommend trying this technique because the customers do get just a wee bit angry if they don't get the free bonuses. You know, it's interesting because I know a company that they're not doing direct marketing, but they'll make changes in their customer service policies and all that kind of thing. And they have a standard policy that any time they implement something with a deadline, they always automatically extend it 30 days. just to avoid all of those customer service problems and hassles. Related to this thing of creating action is the next marketing mistake, which is just not using bonuses. Not using bonuses. There's a couple factors on this. I like to use bonuses that are, when possible, the bonuses actually have 3 to 5 times the value of the product.
Of the product's cost.
Yes, of the product. So let's say the product's going to sell for $100. I would like to see, in the ideal world, I would like to be able to give away $300 to $500 worth of bonuses for ordering that $100 product, and they get to keep the bonuses even if they return the product. And you say, but geez, Marlon, if I do that, somebody could just order the product, send it back, and get to keep the bonuses. Well, yeah, that will happen on occasion, but still your refund should be under 3% if you have a good, solid product. And most people just procrastinate too much, and they just never get around to sending that product back. And I'm assuming that you're selling a product that very few people would want to return to begin with. Declan, I wanted to bring up something with you, because if you're selling a service, you have an interesting thing, a bonus that you can throw in that costs you virtually nothing that can really incredibly increase your response, and it's the consultation thing. Why don't you mention or talk about that briefly?
Well, the consultation that I sell, I give a consultation on, I design websites and I set up businesses. And the one thing that people consistently forget online is giving email consultations, email customer service as a bonus. You can add so much value. You can give them 3, 6, 12 months worth of value because it's not like the telephone. They're not going to pick up email and just call you and just contact you to gab. They're going to hit you with a specific message, and it really qualifies the service and is a huge bonus you can add into any package online.
So I think that using your bonuses is really important. As far as what type of bonus to use, depends on your product or service. For what I sell, most of the things I do, I use information products, free reports, free videos, free audio tapes. They have a high perceived value. People attribute a lot of value to them, but their actual hard cost is very low.
But bonuses also have to be very valuable in their own right. You know, you don't want to give away as a bonus a product someone wouldn't want to buy, you know, if you were just selling it on a standalone basis. Bonuses, in many cases, and I believe that my bonuses are even more desirable than my actual products.
The next marketing mistake would simply be giving no reason why. When you do something like this with an exceptional offer, a bunch of free bonuses, or you're giving a strong deadline, or you're offering a big price discount on a product for ordering now, or even if you're having a sale, you need to give people the reason why, the rationale. Why are you able to do this? Because there's nothing worse than a sell. How many times have you seen that sell in the newspaper? It's been getting across the nation now for quite a while. We're blowing them out. And then after they're blowing them out, they're having a clearance sell. And then after the clearance sell, they're having a spring cleaning sell. And there's all of these meaningless things, and there's no believable reasons why. And if you want a believable reason why, would be something like, We just received a shipment of widgets, and in the shipment, a few of them were slightly damaged. Because of that, we can't sell them at full retail. So, you know, our loss is your gain, and you probably won't even notice the slight little bit of damage that's been done to them. But because of that, we're having to sell them at a 30% discount. Now, there's a believable discount, and there's a reason why that makes sense. And you just didn't all of a sudden arbitrarily decide to cut your prices, which makes me feel like, well, why have you been overcharging and gouging all of your customers all the rest of the time?
Absolutely. I got an offer recently for a information product, which I found very interesting. It was from a well-known marketer, and anyway, he was asking about half of what he was normally asking for. But his reason was, and this was a great offer, his reason was is he had sent out quite a few complimentary copies and review copies, and now that he had them back, he only had about 30 copies left of this product. They were slightly used, is what he said. They were slightly used, in quotations, and because they were slightly used, even though they were exactly the same as the brand new product, they just weren't in a little shrink wrap and the videos had been watched, they became a product that he could discount by 50%. And so the offer was even, the original offer was good, but you know, then when you got the little explanatory note saying you can just take 50% off of this because it's a used or a slightly used copy, it became even more desirable because I felt like not only was I getting a great deal, but he explained to me why he was giving me this good deal.
There's a famous marketer named Robert Collier who wrote a classic marketing book called The Robert Collier Letter Book. And you can't buy it at your bookstores anymore. But Robert Collier used to have these sales called the damaged goods sales, and it was the same type of thing. And he would sell all these products, and then he'd send back a letter, and he had the return rights. And so he'd send a letter explaining that, you know, they give a money back guarantee, and only 1% of the people ever request their money back. But they do have a small supply of the products on hand that people return. They were slightly used, or slightly damaged, or maybe they were slightly damaged in shipping. And because of that, he's having this 50% off sale. And it's really funny because maybe he would have 100,000 of them that were damaged and he'd end up selling 1,000,000 of them on the damaged goods sale. Yeah, hey, Joey, can you take some more of these things in the back room and scuff them up a little bit?
Well, I guess that the marketer who was selling me his seconds or his slightly used ones, if he ran out of used ones, he'd probably just go into the new pile and just give me the new ones. For him, it's I guess a marketing test more than anything else, and a way to get rid of products where there was either returns on it or legitimate returns, or if you'd send out review copies or whatever.
Yeah, I don't recommend on the one hand deceptive trade practices, but it's certainly one way to do it, and it's a very interesting idea.
I don't think you'll ever get into trouble for selling products that you say are used and then delivering new products.
Well, you're probably right.
I don't think you will ever get into trouble by over delivering on that end.
Let's go on to the next marketing mistake then, which is targeting a market you can't easily reach. Have you ever known someone who's done this? I was talking to a friend the other day, he's a very good marketer, but their biggest challenge is they have a market that is very difficult to reach. She doesn't have magazines that she can easily run ads in. The people are very hard to target with direct mail. Now, it's a really good market. I mean, they have money. It's an affluent market. The problem is that it's harder than heck to reach these people. And so one of the big mistakes is, hey, you've got to market to people and sell to people that you can reach with your marketing message. And if you can't reach them, you can't sell them.
I think it's very important to have an established market before you start really getting involved with your product. I know that I've worked with a lot of people, and you know, maybe the market is a little bit shifty. Not dishonest, but the market is just hard to pin down. And what happens is when you do find a small sampling of the market, the worst thing is you then test some offer, and it's like a total and complete success. It is the most profitable test you have ever done in your entire life, and then it's over. because you can only compile 5,000 names, or you can only go into one trade magazine, or worse, you can't go into any trade magazines, and you have to do some very complex way of getting leads. It's craziness to go after. Even when on the online world, I do a lot of online marketing, and people say, what do you think is important when I'm doing an online promotion to a special interest group? I said, making sure that there are other types of media and other methods to reach your market, because in the event that your tests are successful, then you're going to want to roll out on an offline basis, to do a big million piece direct mail, to do display advertising in magazines, to do broadcast on special interest TV shows. And if you don't have established ways to reach a market, then you're going to spend all your time trying to find those customers to send your great offer to.
The flip side of that mistake is kind of interesting, which is simply failing to continue something that's been successful for you, because you always want to have a continuation. You always want to have a plan B. You always want to have a way you can keep making money with what you're doing. And it's really interesting, because a lot of people, they get something that's working, they get bored with it, and they just stop it. No good reason. It didn't stop making money. It didn't stop producing cash. They just got tired of it. They just got bored with it, and they stopped it, and it was making money. And then, 6 months later, when their marketing system's not working and the direct mail's response falling off and everything's going to heck, somebody asks them, well, what about that old letter you used to send out? And they send it out, and all of a sudden, everything's working again.
I think you pointed it out very aptly to me. I had a promotion I was doing a few years ago that worked very well and actually got me enough capital to start my business. And you asked me what happened to that, if I'd sold the rights or something, and I said, well, I just got bored with it. And you looked at me and said, why did you get bored making money? And Marlon, I guarantee you, I will start doing that promotion again, if for no other reason, because I don't think I could face you every week when I see you unless I knew that I was doing everything I could to make my business 100% profitable.